welcome to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
Welcome, my friends. Welcome, one and all, to another live installment of the award-winning Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards. It's a hot and humid Saturday evening, June the 19th, as we broadcast to you live from AM 1380 WLRM Studios in Memphis, Tennessee, simulcasting on the internet at thepoliticalcesspool.org and libertynewsradio.com. We're also going out to the AM-FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network via satellite. So, so many ways to catch the political cesspool. And if you can't catch us live, catch us anytime on demand in the broadcast archives at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Big night for you tonight. Keith Alexander, of course, joining me tonight during the first hour. As always, he has a veritable cornucopia of topics that he's going to be bringing to your attention this evening. And it's a good night. Of course, any night in the political cesspool is a good night, as you well know, but it's a particularly good night for me personally for a couple of reasons. Number one, as you can probably tell, the audio quality is back to 100%. They've been working a little bit here at WLRM Studios over the course of the past several weeks to get our digital audio quality back up to snuff, so to speak, and it's back, so should be a little bit better audio quality for you tonight. And on Tuesday, I have a birthday, and birthdays are very big in this family. I'll turn 30 years old, pretty much, Keith, the last birthday you look forward to, I guess. After 30, it's all downhill. Am I right or wrong? You would know.
Well, look, you know yourself now. We've been talking about how since your baby has arrived, you've been buried alive, basically. you can't move. You're so hemmed up that you can't go out to take a cup of coffee without permission from the commander in chief. Am I telling a lie, or am I telling the truth, James?
Keith, what's your adage that you always have in situations
such
as this?
Well, it's my father. A little bit of wisdom passed on to me by my father. May God rest his soul. Some years ago, he told me, "Listen, son, just remember this: any man who says he's the boss at home will lie about other things too." And I thought that was kind of cowardly at the time that I heard it, but now that I've lived it, and now I'm seeing you live it, I tell you what, when you hit the nail on the head, James, you hit it straight, right?
Well, that's absolutely right, Keith, and be that as it may, it's still a fact that I will turn 30 on Tuesday, and I'm looking forward to it. We're going to try to do it big, do it large, and do it political cesspool style, I guess you could say. So anyway, it's a good week. We're back up to high audio quality. Fun week coming up for me, and of course, being here with you, Keith, is always enjoyable. More than enjoyable. It's a privilege and a pleasure, and it's even more so when you take into account what you're going to be bringing to the audience's attention this evening. Some of it correlates with the big book that we've released a couple of weeks ago, and some of it doesn't. And two things you will hear about for sure tonight, ladies and gentlemen, is Glenn Beck has totally outdone himself in doing a big production about the black founding fathers of America. You probably didn't know that it was the black patriots that won the Revolutionary War. Yes, it wasn't George Washington. It was the black patriots that have been completely scrubbed from history, according to Glenn Beck. We're going to be talking a little bit more about that this hour, I can guarantee you. And also, the Political Cesspool radio program was honored by Keith Olbermann this week. I was specifically mentioned in his Worst Person in the World commentary on Monday, just a few days ago. I believe that was June 14th. So that's exciting news as well, Keith.
Well, you've got the right enemies with Keith Olbermann. I've never seen a more spineless example of castrated manhood in my life than Keith Olbermann. If possibly Chris Matthews is right up there with him. But I tell you what, talking about the effect of, you know, your book, I think, I hate to keep coming back to it. It sounds like we're shamelessly promoting it, but I think you have really stumbled upon the pivot point, the linchpin in winning the culture war. I think that it's like the one stick in the beaver dam that if you pull it out, eventually the water will come through, and before you know it, the whole beaver dam has been swept downstream. This is it. If you can somehow get the majority of white people to ignore and to no longer fear being labeled a racist, I think that's the key to winning the culture war, James. I really think you have hit the nail on the head on this one.
Well, we tried to write a book that was very timely and both entertaining and enlightening, and certainly we talked about that a great deal last week and even to a smaller extent the week before at the big CFCC live broadcast of June 5th. And, of course, if people want more information about the book, they can simply go to racismbook.com. But, yeah, I mean, we wrote it not to make money. Of course, there's not a lot of money to be made in the America First movement. We certainly can't get corporate sponsorships because we have a sort of problem with telling the truth that a lot of corporate entities don't approve of, particularly if those truths are politically incorrect. But nevertheless, the book really hits the nail straight, as you say, Keith, and we're excited about it. And some of the things, some of the tenets of that book we'll be elaborating on during this first hour as they relate to some stories that you have on the docket.
Right. Like we said, when you hit the nail on the head, you drive it straight. And what's so important about overcoming this cowardice about being charged or labeled a racist is that it not only affects your life, it affects the life of the community and the life of the nation. And you bring out two great examples in that book, James, and I want to kind of go over them briefly with the audience. The first is George W. Bush was actually responsible for 9/11. Now, before all of the mainstream conservatives go bonkers about this, we're not suggesting that he was directly responsible, but he set in play and in motion by his fear of being labeled a racist everything that was needed to create the disaster. In fact, it did create the disaster.
And explain how that was, Keith, in our opinion.
Well, I've done some research. A guy named James Fulford, who writes for VDare, had an article that he produced wrote quite some time ago saying, civil rights laws don't care if you live or die. Don't. And he said that, he pointed this out, there was a fellow named Michael Toohey who was a veteran U.S. Air ticket agent in the Portland, Maine airport. And on the morning of September the 11th, 2001, he checked in head terrorist Muhammad Atta and his companion Abdulaziz Alomari into a morning flight to Boston, in which, you know, was the first leg of their trip that ended with Atta piloting the hijacked jet into the North Tower of the World Trade Center. In 2005, being questioned about this, Toohey said, I thought they looked like two Arab terrorists, but I then berated myself for the stereotype and did nothing. And furthermore, in further questioning, he admitted that several months before this catastrophe, 3,000-plus Americans died on that date, he had attended a seminar that was sponsored by U.S. Air and the FAA under the head of Japanese-American Clinton appointee Norman Mineta, who was mysteriously and inexplicably kept on his job by George W. Bush, probably because the W in George W. Bush's name stands for wuss or wimp, okay? Well, he keeps him on, and he had this deathly aversion to racial profiling, because if you racially profile, in other words, use your common sense in discharging your job duties as a ticket agent, like Michael Toohey should have, then you are subject to being labeled a racist. Well, he was told that there is now an FAA regulation that is still on the books that forbids investigating Arabs by asking them too many questions, and furthermore, specifically fines an airline if you have more than two young Arab males in secondary questioning, because that would be discriminatory. In other words, he was totally handcuffed in the discharge of his duty. He could not follow the common sense dictates of his own gut feelings because of this political correct regime that we live under, which is driven by the fear of being labeled a racist.
Keith, the question begs to be asked. You mentioned that this ticket taker was a Toohey. Now, is he in any relation to the infamous Toohey family of Blindside fame?
I don't think so. I think that
it's just something about that name that you have to be a politically correct simpleton,
well,
or
well,
that,
I guarantee it seems like we know three that are right off the get go, and
true.
At least three. Let me see. Well, there's Mr. and Mrs. Tui, their daughter, that's three, their son, that's four, and then, of course, we have Michael Tui, the ticket agent. But Michael Tui, the ticket agent,
Hold on, he was about to lose a job. We've got to take a break. We're going to pick up on the story on the other side. We are just getting started, just getting warmed up tonight in the political cesspool. Stay tuned. I'm going to unleash Keith and the seventh level of hell when we return. So you're going to enjoy it. We'll be back.
The political cesspool, guys. We'll be back right after these messages.
Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand me, baby.
Don't let me be
misunderstood. Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Political Cesspool Radio Program. James Edwards here with you. Keith, our star just keeps shining more brightly. Our rate of ascendancy is just moving straight forward into the stratosphere. The trajectory couldn't be higher. Just when you think that this program can't get more press, we are a media magnet, from CNN to the London Times, Los Angeles Times, New York Times, and so many smaller entities, publications, and programs. They all come to us for quotes. Whether they like us or hate us, they do take notice of us. We are a program of record that makes the establishment media respond. And this week, respond, they have Keith Olbermann mentioning us in his commentary on Monday, June 14th on MSNBC, with the worst person in the world. And he mentioned me by name, and we were very excited about that, of course. See, what they don't understand is that we have caught on to their little game. I wrote a book about it, in fact. And one of the primary tenets of that book is that when they call someone racist, they just are saying that we are a white person. The word racist is thrown around so much like confetti that its sole purpose, it is, of course, a Marxist construct to begin with, and its sole purpose now, as used by the left, is to stifle debate and derail conservative activists from accomplishing anything. Well, when Keith Olbermann calls us that, instead of doing what John McCain and Bush and just about everyone else does, which is kowtow and acquiesce and fall on their sword and apologize and grovel, we just revel in this like a pig in slop. We love it. We understand, and we're not going to be bullied by these baseless smears and intimidation tactics. And I tell you, if more people stood up to the left with the kind of honor and conviction that we do, and would follow the prescription that I lay out so clearly in my book, we could start building a movement that wins. And I tell you, the fact that we get so much press on this program is a testament to the fact that we are doing work the right way. We are accomplishing things. We're bearing tangible fruit. And Keith, I couldn't be happier. This show continues to grow and continues to soar.
Look, it's just, you know, when the left comes after us, we just say, bring it on. And the thing about the charge of racism, you know, we've said that it's a way, it's a synonym for being a conservative white person. It's gone way beyond that now, James. You know, recently I recall that even Keith Olbermann, that paragon of political correctness, and Chris Matthews were denounced by some prominent black commentator as being racist.
And you couldn't be more Marxist than these two guys.
I mean, so that shows it's no longer a conservative white person. It is a white person, and it therefore it has no objective meaning. It has no principle. It's just like being called a honky or being called the N-word. This is what the racist label is now. For example, what happened to Chris Matthews and Keith Olbermann is that they were in such an ecstasy, an afterglow after Obama's election, that Chris Matthews said that he had a tingle running up and down his legs, and that he was just so mesmerized and spellbound listening to Obama, he didn't even sound, he forgot that he was a Negro. And of course, some black guy didn't take this as a compliment and comes down on Matthews and Olbermann, who was trying to defend him. So, you know, that just shows you that if Keith Olbermann and Chris Matthews are racist, in other words, anti-black whites. Everybody is. Nobody is immune from the charge, and quite frankly, the charge is totally spurious and totally ridiculous.
Well, we're going to get into more about the Keith Olbermann versus the political cesspool flap during the second hour with Winston Smith. But, Keith, your commentary on the subject, as always, is spot on. We're going to be talking about Glenn Beck in a moment. But first, I know you want to continue on a little bit with the train of thought you embarked upon in the first segment and then tie in John McCain to it.
Well, what we were saying before in the first segment is that being afraid of being labeled racist not only affects you, it affects the lives of your community and even your nation. 3,000 people died because Michael Toohey was afraid of being labeled a racist, and because our government, led by that venerable so-called conservative George Wimp Bush, had put into play a regulation for the Federal Aviation Agency that said that you can't ask young Arabs additional secondary questions when they come in, and that you can't detain two or more of them without causing your airline to get fined. And if your airline gets fined, guess what happens to you? Your history. Michael Toohey, like most people, had a job. He wanted to hold it. So he started towing the politically correct line, and as a result, over 3,000 Americans were killed in 9/11. Now, that's one example. Here's another example of the effect of being fearful of being labeled a racist. All sorts of conservative Republicans now denounce Barack Obama, but they conveniently forget to tell everybody that they are responsible for the genesis, for the birth, for the development of Barack Obama. They're like Dr. Frankenstein's assistant Igor throwing the switch, and all the electricity comes in and Frankenstein's monster comes to life. If you'll recall, Barack Obama was a Democratic candidate for the Illinois U.S. senatorial seat, or one of them, and he was running against a white Republican who happened to have a messy divorce, and that white Republican was pressured by the Republican hierarchy nationwide and in the state to withdraw from the race. And then the Republican Party, totally and completely slavishly cowed by the fear of being labeled a racist, decided that they would bring Alan Keyes, a black so-called conservative from Maryland, a la a carpetbagger, to Illinois to run against Obama so that the dad-blamed American people would be required by these holy, saintly, non-racist Republicans into electing a black person to the U.S. Senate. There were no black people in the U.S. Senate at the time. Well, all the conservatives, Republicans, were assured by the nationwide hierarchy of the Republican Party, have no fear, this Alan Keyes guy is the real article. He's a real, you know, rock-rib conservative. Well, the first thing out of his mouth once he gets nominated and gets to Illinois is how he is a supporter of reparations for slavery. And, of course, the guy got beaten like a barred mule. I think he got less than 25% of the votes. And Obama is launched to wreak havoc in America and the world, trying to turn America into a socialist, Marxist nation. And who's responsible? Not the Democrats. You know, there was, again, no fight put up by the Republicans. In fact, the Republicans more or less guaranteed that Obama would win that race by insisting on being politically correct, and they were insisting on being politically correct and running Alan Keyes because, again, they were mortally fearful of being labeled racist.
Well, we've talked about this so many times, Keith. As long as the... And let's face it, for all intents and purposes, the Republican Party is controlled opposition. I mean, of that, there is no, I think, there's no debate to be had. I mean, that's just common sense. But
They're both going in the same direction. With the Democrats, you're going in overdrive to the left, and under the Republicans, at best, you're going in second gear.
You do have some state Republican parties like Arizona who have done some good on some certain issues, and there are certain Republicans in lower level,
but we need
lower levels of government.
The Republican Party of all these rhinos like George W. Bush. The Bush family did more to destroy the Republican brand than anyone in the history of the party. They turned the Republican Party into a bunch of wimps.
They probably didn't do as much as Glenn Beck did. We've got to take a break, and we're going to tell you what Glenn Beck did just this week. This will blow your socks off, ladies and gentlemen. This is something else, and Keith's going to tell you all about it when we return.
Guys, we'll be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. We've got to get out of this place.
A lot of the things that Keith Alexander and I are addressing this evening are issues that we address on a pretty weekly routine, or it's just different stories, different news items that all stem from the root of this disease, which is political correctness and the fear that so many white conservative activists have in violating the doctrine of the false religion of cultural Marxism. And, you know, the great thing about it is I have laid out the prescription. You know, if you read my book, you will never be afraid of being called a racist again, and you will know exactly how to respond to these smears and why you should respond in that way. And by the way, I was talking about my birthday coming up on Tuesday. We've got the ISDN line here at the studio. Things are going well, generally speaking, with the program. All things are on the up and up. Well, tomorrow is Father's Day, and it will be my first Father's Day. I have a newborn baby. She'll turn 3 months old 2 days after my own birthday. On June 24th, she'll turn 3 months old. And so this will be my first Father's Day. And if you are looking for the perfect Father's Day gift, have I got the solution for you. Just go to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Get a 2-for-2. Support your favorite political talk radio program while getting Dad a gift that will, as I said before, both entertain and enlighten him. Buy your dad my book for Father's Day. I gave my dad his copy for Father's Day, although I gave it to him about a week ago. I was too excited. I couldn't wait. But nevertheless, go buy it. Support this show. Give Dad a gift that he'll remember for a long, long time by going to thepoliticalcesspool.org. And Keith, after we tell them about Glenn Beck and what he has been up to this week, the reality that every white conservative activist should read my book will be all the more apparent. Keith, what has Glenn Beck done? You know, just when I think I have lost the ability to be shocked, just when I think that after being neck deep in this for nearly a decade, hosting this show for 6 years and following politics just, you know, incessantly, day after day, hour after hour, I had thought, Keith, that I had lost the ability to be shocked. I thought I had seen and heard it all by now, and then Glenn Beck comes and does something so preposterous and so, I guess it would be, you could call it silly if it just wasn't so disgusting. Keith, please help me tell the audience what Glenn Beck has done.
Well, you know, we have three top candidates for the emasculated Conservative Male of the Year Award. Of course, John McCain and his falling on the sword, his Harry Caray Act in throwing the 2008 election because of his fear of being labeled a racist is one of the candidates. The other one is Rand Paul, who allowed his manhood to be dismantled by Rachel Maddow on MSNBC. And then he comes back with ridiculous comments like he gets weepy listening to Martin Luther King speeches. I mean, you know, this guy needs serious therapy, probably shock therapy, if that's the type of conservative he is. But the clown prince, the number one buffoon among politically correct mainstream conservatives, that has to go to Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck, the other day, you've run this on the blog, there is a tape in which on his television show he's trying to tell people that there is a pernicious liberal plot out there to keep the American people from knowing all about the great role the blacks played in the formation of our nation. In fact, he had something about the black founding fathers, and the black founding father that he is trying to tout is some guy named Armistead, who supposedly was a double agent, you know, kind of the progenitor of James Bond in 007 in the Revolutionary War. Total BS, okay? That's one thing. Then the other thing is, it's almost a daily occurrence on his show that he pays homage to Martin Luther King, that great conservative Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King was a Marxist. He was a communist. He was a plagiarist. He was a philanderer. I've got a note to Glenn Beck. Glenn, moral paragons don't have to have their FBI files sealed for 50 years. Deal with that, okay? This man was a reprobate in so many ways. You know, it's amazing that this guy, you know, can even be discussed in polite society, much less named the, you know, most important black man in American history who has a holiday named after him. John McCain came to Memphis during his 2008 presidential run to go to the National Civil Rights Museum and, with quavering voice and tears in his eyes, begging forgiveness from a jeering, hooting crowd of black Democrats for not voting for the Martin Luther King holiday back in the Reagan administration. You know, this is how crazy things have gotten. Now, Glenn Beck needs to understand that you cannot let a camel's nose in the tent. You cannot allow one speck of modern liberalism to get a pass. And Glenn, note to Glenn Beck, the civil rights movement is not something you can give a pass to. If you give a pass to civil rights, then you can give a pass to homosexual rights, you can give a pass to radical feminism, you can give a pass to environmentalism, the sexual revolution, the drug culture. Everything found its blueprint, found its genesis in the civil rights movement.
Well, they are...
Glenn, get off it, baby.
They're all branches from the same tree. That is a fact. But, you know, praising Martin Luther King has just become commonplace among these pseudo-conservatives. But to just completely make up of thin air this series, which we have on our website. You listen, if you haven't seen this video yet, we put it up about
get a bag of popcorn.
Yeah, get a bag of popcorn. Go to thepoliticalcesspool.org. Scroll back a couple of days on the blog. You might have to go back to the second page of blog entries. We put this up Tuesday, Wednesday, something like that. Glenn Beck goes into this elaborate production where he's breaking the news of all of these black founding fathers of America whose history has been suppressed. And he mentions two or three of them in particular. He says, of course, as Keith mentioned, there was this one black patriot who was a double agent. The British Army, the most sophisticated and advanced fighting force in the world at that time, was relying on an American slave to feed them all of their information. But he was also working... He was also working for George Washington as well, and General Washington also relied on this slave to, you know, if it wasn't for him, you know, the war just wouldn't have turned out the way it did. He mentioned that, and what he used as his sources were romantic 19th century paintings. Anybody who knows anything about that, there was not an artist on the battlefield who was, you know, sitting there with his canvas painting pictures while these things. This is just an interpretation of things the way the artist wanted it to be shown, you know, through
well, James, think about this. Listen. just you know, you used to say behind every successful man there's a woman. Well, now Glenn Beck, John McCain, Rand Paul, all of these pseudo conservatives that have been infected with the virus of political correctness would say behind every successful white person you'll find a brave and humble black man. It's probably a Morgan Freeman clone, right?
Well,
his ancestors that did all this, you know.
The famous Negro. The famous painting of Washington crossing the Delaware. Glenn Beck has the producer there at his program zoom in and says, look, that is a face of color there. It wasn't just white people who won America their freedom. There were black patriots and scores of them who fought alongside the people we all know. And the picture, there was, in fact, according to history, a black man who was in the boat helping Washington paddle across the Delaware. What Glenn Beck said was that this was a guy who fought alongside Washington. Well, the fact of the matter was this was Washington's servant who carried around his cloak and his money for him. And paddling across a river does not a soldier make. And the question is this, to whom is Beck pandering? He has no black viewers, and blacks will never view people like Washington and Patrick Henry as their heroes. I suppose Glenn Beck is just doing what he's paid to do, which is to make his all-white audience feel ashamed and guilty and plant the seeds in their minds that nothing in our history has ever been accomplished without the righteous minorities helping us along.
Well, the thing is,
this is just absolute poppycock. You got to go watch this for yourself at thepoliticalcesspool.org. I'm sure we can tune in this week, Keith, and read about the Jewish and Mexican founding fathers as well. But we're going to have to come back after break and talk more about it. Glenn Beck is obviously controlled opposition. I don't know if he's just doing what he's told to do, or if he is that ignorant, but it doesn't matter. The what he does still remains the same. We'll be back.
If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta get out of this place. Girl, there's a better life for me.
If I didn't tell him, I didn't.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Wrapping up our thoughts on Glenn Beck, again, this was just one of the most absurd and preposterous commentaries I have ever seen. And Glenn Beck asked the question, I'll answer it, why did the schools not teach this information in their history classes? Well, that's because it never occurred. There's no truth to it. And surely Glenn Beck has to know that. I just don't know. Like I said, I was asking the question before the break, whether or not he knows the truth and he's just pitching this stuff because that's his job to be a disinformation agent, or whether he really believes it and he's just too ignorant to know better. Either way, it doesn't matter. But and it wouldn't have been a bad thing if what Glenn Beck was saying had been true, that there had been blacks at that time that fought and helped the Americans win our independence. But it just did not happen. And an old-timer in this movement, now long dead, said this once. He said, a controlled opposition is better for the establishment than no opposition at all. If there is no opposition, something sincere might fill the void. But if the establishment can provide its own controlled opposition, then this is the best scenario possible. And certainly people like Glenn Beck prove why there is such an important need for, and I say this modestly, people like us. Shows like The Political Cesspool, Glenn Beck proves on a daily basis what separates us from what the establishment passes as a conservative alternative to people like Keith Olbermann. The Political Cesspool has never been more needed. Shows like ours, networks like Liberty News Radio have never been more needed. That's why we ask you to support this program. Now you can support the show by buying the book that we've authored, and we're excited about it. Go to thepoliticalcesspool.org. Buy the book. Help keep this show going. We can't get sponsors because we refuse and have always refused to toe the line. We're going to tell the truth. We're going to stand up in defense of our cultural heritage, and we're going to lay people like Glenn Beck out to dry because these people are, in fact, the enemy. I am so sick of having to somehow qualify our accomplishments by feeling the need to have some sort of a righteous minority there to give our actions credence.
What people like James
doesn't have to be that way. Shouldn't be that way.
Yeah. What James's book does, ladies and gentlemen, is he shows that you cannot like Glenn Beck, like Rand Paul, like John McCain, seek validation from our enemies by trying to say that there's some black guy, too, that believes like we do. Or
that's
that
the worst possible.
Black people are like us, too. See, we need white racial solidarity, James.
It's the worst answer. All that stuff, that's the worst answer you could possibly give if you're in a public setting or you're trying to debate the merits of your argument or your positions with liberals who are doing what they always do and calling you a racist for being to the right of Joe Stalin, or Nelson Mandela for that matter.
Well, what you ought to do, James, is this. You should say, well, do you have any substantive arguments or are you just reduced to making ad hominem arguments like calling somebody a racist or calling them a fascist or calling them a name of some type? It's like a five-year-old calling his adversary a poopy face. It's ridiculous. It's a spurious charge, and that's what your book shows, and that's the key to winning the culture war, James.
And Keith, this is it. I mean, you know, but unfortunately, Glenn Beck is so afraid of being called a poopy face that he goes on and castrates himself in front of millions of people every day.
He does it on purpose. He, like you said, he's a controlled opposition. He is modeling for all this, you know, this great audience of his, you know, this numerous audience, that you've got to play ball with the blacks. You've got to pretend like blacks are just as conservative as white people, that blacks, that we need a rainbow coalition. We have to have blacks and Hispanics and all sorts of other people believing what we believe, or else our ideas have no validity or substance.
That's right. That's right. Well, anyway, listen, to wrap it up on Glenn Beck, go to thepoliticalcesspool.org. Scroll back on the blog to about midweek this week. You can watch. We put up the video. Folks, no matter how much Keith and I talk about it, you're never going to really understand how grotesque it is and how nauseating it is and how embarrassing it is until you watch it for yourself. So we encourage you to go to our website and do just that. Now, Keith, we've got about 5 minutes before the end of this hour, before you bid us adieu until next week. You got to get in your commentary about soccer. And this is something else we blogged about this week at thepoliticalcesspool.org.
Well, you have a blog that says if you don't like soccer, you're a racist. Well, and it's a good blog entry. Let me tell everybody that they need to read it. But quite frankly, in light of the racial perfidy that's been shown to the white population of America by the elites that run both professional and Division I college American football and basketball, I think that turning to soccer would be a great alternative for our children. They would have a better future in that than they would in the two sports that reward biological abnormality, height and weight, above all else. Height, of course, being basketball, weight being American football. Now, just look at the World Cup, and you'll see that most of the successful teams have a vast predominance of white people on, with the possible exception of Brazil, Argentina, Germany, all these other Netherlands, people like this, that black sub-Saharan Africa, to this point in the World Cup, has won one match. So, you know, we always heard white men can't jump. It's pretty obvious that black men can't kick. If you've ever been to a high school football game where a predominantly white team is playing a predominantly black team, usually the white team wins. And in a close game, it's always for the same reason. The black team can't even find one person in their school that can kick extra points, much less field goals. So consequently, I think that the black men can't kick cliche has a lot more truth behind it than the white men can't jump cliche that we saw in that movie with that great liberal Woody and great mind Woody Harrelson starring in it some years ago.
Yeah, Woody Harrelson and Wesley Snipes, of course, convicted criminal, by the way.
Yeah, just imagine. The thing is, we're not supposed to be proud and have any sense of solidarity as white people, but I guarantee you, blacks are supposed to have it. If you turn on the coverage of the World Cup, you hear about the sainted Nelson Mandela and the sainted situation they have over there, and they tell you about this rugby team and what was the name of that movie, Invictus, where they forcibly integrated the rugby team, which was dominated by white South Africans. But if you'll watch the South African soccer team, apparently old Nelson and the people in charge of South Africa today who are black have made no effort whatsoever to get white South Africans on the South African national soccer team. So it's, you know, like you said in the book, it's a case of heads I win, tails you lose. Don't put up with it. We have the same right to complain about that the blacks have when they think that they're not being treated fairly.
Nelson Mandela, of course, I guess the best way to describe him is a world-famous terrorist. But he
killed 19 people in a bombing. They call them the Princes Street bombings at a railway station. 19 innocent people, but he gets the Nobel Peace Prize, just like Menachem Begin, who is a member of the Irgun, who was responsible for the deaths of 91 people in the bombing of the King David Hotel in Jerusalem in 1948. Apparently, the golden path to getting the Nobel Peace Prize is to be a terrorist that kills innocent people, James.
Well, that's exactly right in today's politically correct climate, Keith.
As long as you're a person of color or a Jew and the people that are killed are somehow, you can cast them into the role of your oppressors.
They cast that movie Invictus perfectly, though, with Morgan Freeman playing Nelson Mandela and the liberal puke Matt Damon. He's such a little obnoxious punk. If you've ever listened to him provide any or attempt to provide any political commentary, it really regurgitates that drivel that
they're like James Dean back in the day. In order to get ahead in Hollywood, white heterosexual males had to succumb to the homosexual casting couch, like James Dean apparently did, in order to get ahead in Hollywood. Now they're doing the same thing intellectually and ideologically. Nobody like a Matt Damon or Kevin Bacon or any of these other people is going to move forward in Hollywood unless they convince the Jews in charge of Hollywood that they are reflexive liberals and extreme liberals. So, you know, we've got to break out of this trap, folks.
And if you
try
to
have a sense of white racial solidarity, and the key to that, as James brings out in his book, is you've got to be willing to stand up and be counted and say, I'm not going to be cowed by any charges of racism. I'm white. I'm proud of our accomplishments. And that's a spurious charge. You know, that you don't see people in the NAACP succumbing to charges of racism. You don't see the Jewish hierarchy in America getting all worried when you point out how racist the apartheid state of Israel is towards Palestinians.
And we're going to talk more about that in the second hour. We're out of time for this one. Keith Alexander, thank you, sir, for your contributions tonight. Winston Smith standing by. The Political Cesspool still has 2 hours forthcoming. Stay tuned, and we'll pick it up right after this.
Right after these messages.
And Harv leaped to his feet and says, something's got a hold on me. Yow! The day the squirrel went berserk in the First Self-Righteous Church in that sleepy little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting hallelujah. Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit of the looms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the amen.